Hello, welcome to another episode of The Average Critics. My name is Obi, and I'm joined by Chris. How are you, Chris?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Not too shabby. No Glenn today. He is otherwise occupied, so it's up to me and Chris to take up the mantle of hosting the podcast. Not too sure how it's going to go, but because it's been a while.
But yeah, true. Here we go.
Cool. So, thought we could start off by talking through a couple of news bits that have happened recently. So me and Chris were talking about just before we started recording that Gal Gadot has been in talks with James Gunn apparently about returning to the DCU as Wonder Woman for Wonder Woman 3 film. So Chris, what are your thoughts on that?
It's a tricky one because, like, I think she portrays the character quite well. But in all respect of the other actors, I don't think it's necessarily the right move for them. Mm. I guess with what happened in The Flash, anyone could be anywhere at any time. So they could keep her in it as well as Aquaman if they're planning to do that. Mm. But yeah, I guess who would be the alternate replacement would be my mindset. And I guess if she's done very well in terms of box office with the first two films, then why not bring her back, I guess? But then I don't know, I think it's a bit shady. But what about you?
I'm trying to come at it from like a two different aspects. From the Gal Gadot aspect of it, I'm very much like you. Like, I like Gal Gadot. I think she's good in the Wonder Woman films. I think she is a good Wonder Woman, so I have no problem with her coming back and being Wonder Woman. That's fine. My problem is two things, really. So the first thing, which I spoke about before we started recording, was that kind of like this whole thing of like bringing her back, and potentially they were probably going to bring back Ezra Miller if The Flash did well, but they don't want to bring back Henry Cavill. It just seems a bit, leaves a bit of a sour taste in my mouth, I think. It just seems a bit, I want to say unfair, because, you know, whatever, it's Hollywood, it's business, but it just seems a bit, I don't know, a bit seedy. Like, say, oh yeah, we'll bring you back, but Henry Cavill, you can go fuck yourself, and Ben Affleck, you can go fuck yourself as well.
Yeah.
I'm not too on board with that, but, I mean, it is what it is. My second thing is that I would hope that they're not saying we're going to do another film, Wonder Woman film, based off like how, you know, well received or how good Wonder Woman 1984 was, because that film was terrible. So I would hope that if we did get Wonder Woman 3, that it would be in more of the vein of the first Wonder Woman rather than the second, because in my eyes those two films are night and day. Like, the first one's much better than the second one.
Yeah, true. Second one was not very good.
Well, and just lastly as well, I think if you do bring her back, it again messes with this whole like reboot DCEU to DCU situation. Like, again, I still find it very confusing. I don't actually know what's actually happening with the DC universe going forward. But if you say, okay, we're starting off a new universe, we've got new Henry Cavill, we've got new Superman, we've got new Lois Lane, we've got new, I don't know, we've got Blue Beetle, we've got whoever now, new Green Lantern, and then you say, oh, but we're bringing back Jason Momoa, we're bringing back Gal Gadot, and these films, so the Wonder Woman, this Wonder Woman film that we're going to get now continues on from Wonder Woman 1984, we'd be like, well, how does that work then? Is it a new universe or is it not? You know?
Yeah, true. Yeah, very good point.
A bit confusing.
Yeah, it's all about, a bit up in the air, isn't it, really? Yeah, I feel like for all the little bits she's been in, like Shazam and all that stuff, it's just a bit of a weird scenario to be in for her and the direction of the movies and series.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing to keep her. It's not a bad thing, but the whole thing is going to get rather confusing. Mm. Also, they're going to be in a thing where their current films aren't doing great, and the trajectory of how films are doing these days not boding well for them in general anyway.
Mm.
So if they're gonna like try and get lots of old people and new people to go and watch these films, there needs to be like a linear path for people to follow. So that for me, they need to like cut it dead and start fresh.
I agree.
And if you don't have that, then you're going to have a lot of people confused, or at least a lot of people trying to trace back what they've done. But yeah, I mean, I guess it'll be quite obvious that they've started new with the new Superman film, stuff like that.
Mm.
Which I'm intrigued by. That's like Smallville on the big screen. So I'm intrigued by it. But
well, speaking of that, have you seen some of like the casting that they've done for it and like the characters that are going to be in it?
What is it? Superman Legacy, it's called.
Superman Legacy, yeah. So they've got David Corin Sweat as the new Clark Kent / Superman, who I've never heard of, but he looks like, you know, a Superman type character.
Oh yeah, and they got Rachel Brosnahan,
yeah, who was in House of Cards. I think the character was also called Rachel in that as well. And in she's in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, so I've heard of her, and I think she's a good, from what I have seen of her from House of Cards, in a bit.
But does she look like a Lois Lane to me?
To be fair, she reminds me of the original, and to be honest,
she's got her dark hair.
It reminds me of the original Lois Lane from 1970 whatever Superman film. So looks wise, I think they look good. Acting wise, I'm confident of Rachel Brosnahan from what I've seen of her that she will be a good Lois Lane. I haven't seen David
Corin Sweat.
I haven't seen him.
Okay.
But so I don't know what he's like, but I guess we'll have to wait and see for that one. But I'll say he looks the part.
He's got a chiseled jaw. Yeah.
Yeah. So other people who they've cast in the film is Isabella Merced. Is going to be Hawk Girl. So I don't know. Did you ever watch Dora the Explorer film?
I've just seen a picture. She's, yeah, flipping out. I never saw it, actually.
Yeah, I saw
Was
that.
Was it good?
No, not really.
How old is she that she's playing Hawk Girl?
I think she's like 18, maybe.
2001? So she's 22.
That's 22, okay, fair enough.
Damn.
But yeah, so yeah, she's...
That is quite young, though, to be playing a character such as Hawk Girl.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember when Hawk Girl was in Legends of Tomorrow, her and Hawkman were like characters who basically like lived forever kind of thing.
Yeah, they die and then they come back.
Yeah. So is that like an actual, that's a canon thing?
I think so.
Right. Okay.
So, so they got Guy Gardner. You said that, yeah?
I didn't say that actually, but Nathan Fillion playing Guy Gardner.
Wonder if he'll be Guy Gardner, the Green Lantern, yeah? Or just Guy Gardner, someone who's there in the scene.
Well, I would think he's quite old.
Yeah.
I think James Gunn mentioned that. I think James Gunn mentioned that this Superman film, in this universe, there will already be superheroes about, I think.
I don't know if I like that.
Yeah.
I thought the whole point is that he's there, he pioneers the way for the Justice League and then create. But then I guess Justice League Society of America, I guess, technically was beforehand and they didn't all necessarily have the world beater abilities that the new Justice League have.
That's true.
I don't know. So it's a tricky one.
But yeah, like the. So yeah, it's 50-50 on whether or not he will be. Nathan Fillion, that is, will be. An already established Guy Gardner. I would think that he would already be, because then you're doing an origin story for someone else within a Superman film, which to me would be weird.
Yeah.
So I assume he's going to already be like a Green Lantern, maybe. I don't know. But my thing again with that is, but Nathan Fillion was in, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was in the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So like, That's another one where I'm like, okay, so you're bringing back Gal Gadot, but then you're bringing Nathan Fillion played, I don't know, whoever he played, and now he's going to be also going to be this as a completely different character. I'm just like, you're making it confusing for me. And also, I feel I feel like, because like Nathan Fillion and James Gunn are like mates, so I feel like he's just like, do you want a job? And he's like, yeah, sure.
He casts his girlfriend / wife, I don't know what she is to him. He casts Nathan Fillion, and he casts his brother, didn't he?
Yeah, literally.
I know we're very good actors and actresses, don't get me wrong, but...
His brother's definitely going to be in it as well, yeah, 100%.
Mr. Terrific, I can't remember what he does.
Mr. Terrific, Gathegi is going to be Mr. Terrific. And I only know Mr. Terrific from Arrow.
Yeah.
And I know that he's like super, super smart. And I think he was like a former Olympian or something like that. But I don't know anything else about him from, based on Arrow anyway. But yeah, I don't really have any thoughts on that casting, to be honest. I mean, it's fine. I think he was in X-Men. He was in X-Men First Class.
Darwin,
yeah. But yeah,
I've seen how strong Darwin is, and they absolutely just obliterated him in that film.
Yeah, they killed him straight away, didn't they?
Yeah, like, that's mad.
But yeah, that's cool. I think he was in a show called Startup, which I started watching. I think he was on Amazon Prime or maybe Netflix, and he was good in that. Like, I trust him as an actor. Again, I don't know a lot about the character, so I'm not too don't have an opinion either here or there, really. And the last casting announcement is Anthony Carrigan as Metamorpho, the Element Man. And I have never heard
that.
Of,
what is that?
Yeah, I've never heard of the character nor the actor, so I'm not
Might link
sure.
into one might link into one of his other things. Oh, Rex Mason, right. I still don't know who that is. he likes to add a little weird, wacky kind of vibe, so maybe he's trying to achieve that.
Yeah, maybe. I do worry with that, like, so obviously I don't know much about Metamorpho, but you know, Guy Gardner, Green Lantern, Mr. Terrific, Hawkgirl, they're like fairly big characters in the DC universe, and I wonder that, like, is this going to be a Superman film, or is it going to be more of like an ensemble sort of film?
Founding member of the Outsiders. Sorry, carry on.
No, go ahead.
He's a Metamorpho is a founding member of the Outsiders. He's also joined multiple incarnations of the League. His abilities are elemental transmutation, superhuman strength and durability, hyperelasticity and immortality.
Mm. Okay. I mean, it sounds like an interesting character, but again, like, my thing is this going to be a Superman film, or is it going to be like basically a mini Justice League film?
Well, you should probably continue your point from earlier that you were talking about. Sorry, I interrupted, but like, actually, you can continue your point. I'll probably remember what I've got.
No, yeah, I think I was just going to say, like, because James Gunn's, like, as far as I'm concerned, you know, his specialty is kind of making films about teams with characters who people don't necessarily care about and making you care about them. And with these casting announcements, it seems like he's maybe trying to do that again. But I don't know if I necessarily want that. I don't know if I want the first Superman film from this new era of DC to be a team up film. I'd rather it be a Superman and Lois film kind of.
Yeah, I agree. Well, if it's a young Superman, right? So I assume he doesn't know all of his abilities yet. And if he does, he's probably not the greatest at them. But also, you've got two immortal people who, I don't know Metamorpho's weakness, but I'm sure he's got something somewhere. And then Superman, who's basically invincible, plus Hawkgirl, who's, again, really kind of unkillable, along with a Green Lantern that's probably very strong, and Mr. Terrific, who's extremely intelligent. So I just feel like you're just asking for this to be like another one of those moments where you're like, well, are they really ever in danger of dying?
Mm. Yeah, and I think you get that thing. Well, to be honest, this is part of the thing where it's like, how do we make Superman interesting? Because he's so powerful. Like, you get to the point where you're like, well, actually, pretty much any villain you have, Superman will, you know, demolish them, unless they're like some sort of alien or unless they're another Kryptonian like himself. So I think that's the main challenge of trying to make a film like this interesting, because even Justice League, both versions, like, Superman demolished Steppenwolf in minutes, in seconds even. So I think you have a challenge. So this is where I think you kind of have to maybe rethink the course for the film, and maybe think, okay, do we need a Lex Luthor type of character, someone who's a villain but not necessarily a villain based on like strength or power, but is more of like a thinking side of it, or even Brainiac or someone like that? I think would be a bit of more of an interesting take on Superman, because you would literally think, okay, why doesn't Superman just use his laser eyes or use his ice breath or whatever, because he's got everything in his locker kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't really know. It's a tricky one, isn't it? I just hope it's good. I hope it's good. It sounds like, from reading up about this geezer, sorry, I kind of zoned out because I was reading about him, but it sounds like he's got a weakness like Superman. He's got one thing that can make him super weak.
Mm.
I was just trying to see if it connected to Hawkgirl at all, but it doesn't seem to. But yeah. But I'm not looking forward to the film, but I want to see where it goes. And although he's good at putting a band of people together, that's not really what I look for in Superman. But
agreed.
Like you said, even the big bads aren't even that big bad against Superman. So
yeah, I think it's important for, I guess, the future of DC films, that this film is good and that people go to see it. I think if they get this one, get it and they smash it and they do really well, both critically and monetarily, then I think that sets the course for like, okay, cool, we've got something now we're cooking. But if they come out and this film is bad, then I think you're fucked from the start, to be honest.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's like another downhill, it's another uphill battle, isn't it? And you don't really want one of those again. So, but then I feel like they're more in a level playing field now, because I don't think Marvel has particularly brought out anything that's, well, Guardians 3 was pretty good, but they haven't really been hammering away with the really good after the really good after the really good kind of TV and film bits. So, yeah, it's a funny one. Go on, what were you going
to say? I was going to, speaking of, do you want to quickly dive into Secret Invasion? Or
I've got one more thing, and I've only just thought of it, and I don't know if it's actually true, but I saw on the internet about a Spider-Man 4 movie with Tobey Maguire.
I saw that as well. I don't
remember. Tom Hayden Church on rumour of potential Spider-Man 4 film by Sam Raimi. That was a week ago. We can talk Secret Invasion.
I was just thinking, because you were talking about, you know, how Marvel's products recently have not been the best.
So
it's probably worth kind of like diving into Secret Invasion a little bit. I think we can just kind of talk about it on the surface level, and then maybe when Glenn's back, we can talk into it a bit more, and I suppose kind of maybe like the wider implications for Marvel going forward. I think the last time we spoke, I feel like what episode did we watch? Was it episode four?
We just talked. I think we just spoke about, maybe it was episode five. I'm sure we spoke about what's his face being murdered.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That'll be five, right?
That's four.
That was four. What the hell happened in between four and six?
So at the end of four, Talos dies. Episode five, they try to kill Nick Fury's wife.
They
also get the definitive Rhodey is a Skrull. moment.
Apparently it has been, they didn't say it in there, but apparently it has been confirmed when he's been a Skrull since as well.
Well, so this is this. So the director of, or the creator of the show said, he didn't definitively, he said, I believe that he has been a Skrull since Civil War or whatever. But
that is mental.
But he, but like, I think I read the quote the other day and it didn't sound like that was a defeat. That was just in his opinion, he's been a Skrull since Civil War.
What was he wearing when they found him? In like
a hospital gown.
So maybe he was then.
I mean, maybe, but...
But he was also walking without the exoskeleton.
In real life?
Yeah, the real life one when he was... But they did carry him out.
No, yeah, he wasn't walking. They carried him out. He couldn't walk.
Did they? Okay.
He couldn't
walk. That would imply Civil War. So he doesn't know about Tony's death. He doesn't know about the blip.
The blip. Thanos.
Very coincidental that he wasn't in the blip as well. Yeah. This is the trouble you have, right? So if you, unless this machine, which I can't imagine is stronger than the stones, how did they plan it so that, do the people go back to exactly where they were?
So yeah, this is another thing.
Wait,
so,
hold on though. But Rhodey didn't blip, did he?
No, he didn't. But by logic, like you say, I mean, maybe they only captured a couple of people before the blip happened. But
yeah,
by logic, if you said, okay, we started capturing people after Civil War, by law of averages, half those people would have disappeared.
Disappeared, yeah.
And I guess also, maybe they could disappear and then just come straight back, I guess.
But, yeah, but half them Skrulls are meant to have disappeared as well.
That is very true as well.
I think for sake of continuity, you have to make it after the blip.
I agree.
And you just say, oh, he went in for a redo operation for the exoskeleton or something. And that's when they got him. Because that would make most sense.
Yeah.
The whole, like, I don't want to shit on this series because I wouldn't say it's bad. It's just not well structured.
I think it's bad.
this is, isn't it, really? I thought it was Maria's time to shine and they just murdered her. Fury, they made seem like a weak, old, rubbish agent who actually knows nothing about anything and he's been using Skrulls for ages.
Yeah.
And then that, oh my God, the last episode, right? Oh.
Just Chris, before you go off, I just want to say that after episode 5, I thought episode 5 was pretty okay. I was like, okay, cool, I'm looking forward to that. I went straight from episode 5 to episode 6. I was like, cool, I'm on a high, or as high as I could be from this show. And then watching episode 6, I was literally like, this is the worst finale they have done on all of these shows.
Ever.
Like, it's terrible. Sorry.
That is, like, honestly, that. I'm trying to think of the only redeeming factor, and this is going to make me sound like a sadist. The only redeeming factor for that last episode was the very last 2 minutes.
Yeah, I agree.
Bar him and his wife going off.
Yeah, I didn't give a shit. Like,
that bit where don't know why he did it, the president sent out the order.
Yeah.
And then humans and Skrull were getting killed. That was so on, hit the nail on the head. Like, that is perfect.
That's interesting as well.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah.
And like, that itself was good, but the rest of it was just, I just don't even know where to, like.
I was like, yeah, talk us through it, what you like.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the fuck it up, and I was trying to forget about. Oh, so basically, Nick Fury meets up with his new best pal, the lady, I can't remember her name. What is her name? Is that the start of the episode?
Sonya?
Sonya?
I think it's Sonya.
Oh, no. First of all, we have Gravik going nuts on his people. Or was that last episode as well?
That's episode 5 as well.
Oh, shit. Okay, my bad. Okay, this is where I'm getting confused. Okay, so Nick Fury goes to Finland to find his... Is it Finland? To find his grave?
Yeah, Finland, yep.
And in his grave, or one of his many graves, he's got... every DNA sample of every Avenger slash superhuman person ever.
Which I think is ludicrous, by the way, but yeah.
Yeah, because I can't imagine all of them bled.
Well, not even that. I was just like...
If you can get it, then I'm sure many other people could have got it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand, like...
Like, my thought was, like, what was Nick Fury planning on doing with this?
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
Like, what did you want to create? Like, did you want to clone people or something? Or what? Like, I don't know.
I honestly don't know either. And that's the thing. And, like, and it was all in one little shitty vial. I was like, really?
Mm.
Like... I'll be honest, I couldn't tell that girl was Nick Fury when she went in to go against Gravik. I couldn't tell that. I wouldn't have been able to tell you. I thought it was a bit sus, but...
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, well, why is Nick being so stupid? Like, why is he going into this place where it's all that radiation and that? So, yeah.
I'll be honest, I still don't really know why they gave it to Gravik. That was really, like... They both got superhuman powers. That was such a shit move. Like, why did they think that was a good move?
Yeah, I mean, using logic, it's a terrible move. It doesn't make sense to give him what he wants. But from their perspective, they won, I guess. So that makes it a good move. But I will say that I don't know. So for those who want a bit of extra context, I suppose.
Yeah, sorry.
So Nick Fury goes to meet Gravik. Or Nick Fury, in inverted commas, goes to meet Gravik at the Skrull headquarters. He sees that a bunch of Skrulls have been killed, presumably by Gravik, because they're revolted. Him and Gravik have a face-off. Gravik gives a long, really well-acted speech, which I think was wasted because he wasn't actually talking to Nick Fury. He puts the vial of the harvest, into the machine, confirms that it's got everybody's powers, basically. Everyone's DNA, Then, for some reason, at this point, Nick is like coughing and basically dying from radiation poisoning or whatever. And then Gravik uses the machine on himself whilst Nick is in the vicinity for some reason. And then he turns into a Super Skrull, Gravik that is, and goes to kill Nick Fury. Nick Fury stops him and is now super strong. Nick turns out to be Gaia. Disguised obviously as Nick, and then they have a Super Skrull battle with each other.
Ugh, disgusting.
The battle itself is pretty bad. The CGI is pretty bad. The thing that annoys me the most out of the whole thing is that Gaia is so much better at using the powers than Gravik is, and I don't know why. Like, she batters him in the fight pretty much. And I have no idea why. They both got the powers at the exact same time.
Yeah, I mean...
I just didn't get it.
This is my issue with it. Wait, did you want to carry on saying the
episode?
It was just issue after issue. Like, I thought this had a good core element. Skrulls invading Earth. I thought it was a good idea.
Mm.
How to tackle this is a difficult one in a 6-episode series. Mm. However... On this occasion, glad it was over in 6. However, you're right. They both got powers. She, for some bizarre reason, knew how to use those powers with ease.
Mm.
I want also to add that unless she absolutely disintegrated his whole body, how did her shot through his stomach kill him?
Yeah.
What? There was no, there needs to be like an, it doesn't really matter in this series, but like, they needed to make it obvious there was a way of killing him. Because otherwise, we just saw a battle. Yeah, it would have been really cool if they'd done the CGI a bit better. Yeah, it would have been really cool if it was more than 2 seconds long. And now you've just got this super character just roaming Earth.
Yeah.
With all these abilities. Like.
Yeah, sorry.
What? She's going to live forever as well because she's got Thor's ability to never die. Like, what?
Mm.
Oh, it was so ridiculous.
They've completely written themselves into a corner here because they have literally, in this show, they have made by far the most powerful being in the MCU. By far.
Yeah. I'll say,
at any point, any person who the Avengers are fighting, who, if there's any sort of like world destruction super villain, you'll be like, okay, just let's call up Gaia then, because Gaia's got the powers of 30 odd superheroes.
Yeah.
Like,
well, this is it. This is it. I think the only way they're going to get around it now is by saying, oh, we've imbued you with so much DNA, you're dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they should have done that in the show. I think she should have died in the show. They should have said, she's overloaded with power and then she dies or something.
Yeah. I agree. I feel what they've ultimately done, because like Captain Marvel, I won't say I was like her biggest fan, right? I wasn't, but the film wasn't the best. But her as a character, I've grown used to and become a bit more accustomed to. They have technically nerfed her with these other two characters. Well, it looks like they've nerfed her with these other two characters in the next film. So they've done something where they've brought her down a peg or two, because I think they do ultimately want Thor to be the top dog, but again, they didn't do great with four, so, or four Love and Thunder. But this one, yeah, they're just gonna have to kill her off. But then it didn't seem like they are, because they had that in the mini talk / negotiation at the end, didn't they? You help me, yada yada yada.
Yeah, and my thing is now, like, are we ever gonna see her? Like, are we gonna see her again? Because again, the show wasn't well received either. So are we gonna see this character again? You can't just leave that dangling thread there.
Yeah.
Like, we have to see her again. We have to either get a conclusion to her story, or she has to be an integral part of the MCU going forward.
Yeah, I agree. It's a bit of a... Yeah, they've really screwed it on this one, I think.
They have. They really have.
All the Avengers DNA. Every single one.
Everyone.
So she now super intelligent, like Iron Man.
Honestly,
and Bruce Banner and shit like that.
Maybe, I don't know.
Because I didn't like, I'm gonna throw out there, yeah. I didn't like She-Hulk, right? She-Hulk wasn't good. Like they did it wrong. They could have been good, they did it wrong. I didn't like the ending either. I thought the ending was disgusting. but like, yeah, this was no better. This was probably worse.
So the funny thing about it is, so She-Hulk's not my favourite. I think some episodes were decent, some episodes weren't good. The ending of She-Hulk made fun of exactly an episode like this.
Yeah.
It's so funny to me. Like, are the creators of these shows not watching each other's work? Because, like, it just kind of takes the piss out of... It just kind of proves everything that happened in that She-Hulk finale, where she says, oh... you know, the bad guy was going to take the serum and he was going to turn into a huge monster and then blah, 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 blah. And like, and then She-Hulk saying, no, that's stupid. That's been done over and over and over again. And it's shit. Let's do something different. And then you get the very next show? Or maybe, no, maybe it's, was Hawkeye after She-Hulk? I can't remember. Anyway.
No, before.
Was it before? Maybe even is the next show. To have that then... have the directly after to have the finale that the previous show was taking the piss out of just screams to me of like, clearly these lot are not communicating at all and they're not paying attention to each other's
work.
They go and do their own and even stuff like, so I'm perfectly fine with Rhodey being a Skrull. I actually think it's semi interesting, but this is the only show, series, or you know, piece of MCU content where he's acted differently to the point where you're like, oh, he's going to be a Skrull then.
Yeah, yeah.
If like, you say he's
too over-obvious.
Yeah, way too obvious. If you say he's been a Skrull since Civil War, it would have been great if in moments after Civil War, you notice he acts differently. But I obviously haven't gone back and watched him in a little bit, but if I would bet money that in every appearance of his, Don Cheadle's, of his after him, he's exactly the same as he was in Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2.
I don't think they've changed him.
It just seems like a lack of continuity to me.
I hope they don't do what they did in Star Wars, and they've gone in one direction here, then the next film or series, they kind of just ignore the fact that all of this has just happened.
Oh, yeah,
just like the whole thing. We said it in the previous ep, like, what was their aim? Like, why has Nick Fury failed for the last 30 years to find a habitable planet and negotiate these terms? Like, this ending, like, oh, yeah, I've negotiated you to go and live on the planet with...
Oh, that pissed me off so much.
And also, you've done that, but you didn't show. Oh, that's like, I've literally just got it on in the background because I just wanted to do a little recap myself. Yeah. When she gets Drax's arm, awful.
Terrible.
Who's got invisibility as well?
Ghost, I think.
Oh, Jesus. They got... Oh, God, really?
Which to me didn't make sense because she wasn't on the Battle of Earth, as far as I'm aware.
Was she not?
I don't think so. I could be wrong.
But who's maybe... the ice? Who's the icicle sphere? The icicle pike?
Is, Oh, I don't know, actually. Good question. I don't know.
Ice.
Is it... No, it's not Ebony Maw, is it? No, I don't know, you know. I'm not sure. But
Anyway,
the way they just the way Nick Fury just threw in at the end. Oh yeah, by the way, we've negotiated with the Kree that you can go and stay there. And I was just like, oh, this is so that line annoyed me so. I was like, this is so stupid. Like, so you couldn't have negotiated that before.
Like, oh, this is it. What's made it so? Yeah, it, that's
It's bad. It's a bad show, unfortunately, with some I think decent moments, but. I would say this show had the lowest of highs for me and potentially the lowest of lows of all these shows so far.
Yeah. Like, if I'm ranking this
amongst the shows, because I think this is probably my least favorite one, unfortunately.
It is, unfortunately. It's not had... I think in the previous ones, see, She-Hulk's still down there. But I think She-Hulk beats it. I don't like She-Hulk because I just think they went the wrong direction. But this, they've just completely gone the wrong direction. At least she was a lawyer and there was some good story between them.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, this is the worst. This is the worst. I think I'm just disappointed with this one. Like, with WandaVision and Loki, there wasn't an expectation. There was to an extent, but there's like, I didn't know what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like, oh, they've done something. Oh, it's good. Oh, they haven't quite executed it. So they fluffed a few middle episodes or the end episode. Fine, whatever. But this is just like mess up after mess up after mess up. Like, yeah. The saving grace for this one was the other agent lady, who's Russian lady. I feel like she's the only saving grace of it. I can't remember her name again. She's also in the Bear TV series.
Olivia Colman.
Yeah, she literally is the only saving grace of it, I think, personally.
She was good. Yeah, I liked her.
Yeah, I think she was really good. I don't know what else to say about it, really. I'm a bit disheartened with it.
Yeah, I think you're right when I expected this to be good. And none of these shows, in my opinion, so far have been top tier. None of them, for me, have even reached the heights of... I mean, obviously, you know how much I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. None of them, for me, have reached the heights of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. None of them have reached the heights of the Netflix shows either. Like as at their highest highest, so like Daredevil season one, season two, like that level. None of these shows have reached that level for me yet. But at the same time, I thought, okay, this seems like spy thriller, espionage. Seems like it's gonna be more grounded. Okay, cool. It looks like it's gonna be really good. And then I think I was just really disappointed.
I think what this could have done, it needed this series needed more substance. So like. I would have liked to seen, I know CGI is hard, and I know it's hard to continuously do it, but I would have liked to have seen what Nick Fury has tried to be, like, it would have been somewhat boring and maybe a bit political, but I'd like to have seen what he's been doing for the last 30 years, because I feel like he's useless right now for the last 30 years. It would have been nice to see why Talos has carried on going with him for this last 30 years. Yeah, he's his friend, but you can't tell me you've really thought, he's done everything he can for the last 30 years. We're still here. And I think we need a bit more background on all these characters. Because I had no idea why Thanos' daughter resented him, really. Didn't really have that feeling that she really did. Didn't really get Nick Fury, what he's been up to, why he's failed so much. the ending with his wife was cute, but you kind of saw it coming for the amount of time she asked him in the last two episodes, like, do you actually love me? Well, I feel like it was going to obviously be the outcome that he does. And like, yeah, maybe it would have been cool to actually see how Rhodey actually was captured and when. I feel like there's core elements to this that could have boosted this up. And then maybe there could have been a bit of an adventure to the Skrull finding all the pieces to the DNA that Fury had. Because that seems ultra crazy that he had it in only one location as well. That seems mad. And the fact that you can just, it's in a little vial, didn't make any sense to me as well. But anyway.
I agree. And I think that, like, at the end of the day, you would probably ask, is it, like, is this show, like, necessary viewing? Like, is it essential viewing? And I would have to say it's no, it's not really. No, it's not. Nick Fury starts off in space, he ends up in space. We didn't know really that there was that many Skrulls. By the end of the show, all the Skrulls are going to go back to Kree or wherever the fuck. So that doesn't really matter either.
Yeah.
You know, like, we didn't know about Gravik. Gravik's now dead. You know, it's just like, I don't know. The show's not really... Well, we never see Maria Hill. Now Maria Hill's dead. You know? Which I actually thought somehow was going to be some sort of... I thought they were going to bring her back somehow. I thought maybe they tricked her somehow. But yeah, no, she's actually dead. I was like, oh, okay, cool. But yeah. Disappointing show.
Yeah.
The next show is...
It deflates me a little bit talking about it. Just like...
What is the thing? So like, okay. So actually, we'll talk about... We better talk about it when Glenn's here, because we can all like get stuck into it. But
yeah,
mate, Marvel was on a downward trend.
Yeah,
like a downward trend, and
which is why it's key for DC to capitalize on this moment.
Yeah, agreed. And mate, I'm hoping that maybe Loki season 2 will bring up the levels a little bit, because I think season 1, although I feel like I didn't like it as much as everyone else did, I still enjoyed it, and it's probably at the very least probably the second best show they've put out for me. Bare minimum top 3. So I'm hoping that can be a bit more, you know, better quality story-wise. And they released a trailer the other day. So Chris, you seen the trailer. What did you think about that? And how are you looking forward to the show?
Yeah, Loki season 2. Like, I liked Loki for the most part. I thought good concept. I think they nerfing the Infinity Stones was an interesting angle to go. And I think the whole time jumping and finding these cracks in time and yada yada yada, and then them obviously meeting Kang was good. I think, I can't remember what was the big downfall for it. I can't quite remember, but it didn't quite have the pack the punch at the ending as it did throughout the majority of the series, did it? But I'm looking forward to it because I like Tom Hiddleston's character. Tom Hiddleston acting as Loki does really well. What's his name? He plays. I'm going to just quickly look at
Owen Wilson.
Yeah, Owen Wilson, who plays
Morbius.
Yeah, I think they work quite well together. I think they're quite a good duo. And the trailer, obviously them going to that room where obviously Tom Hiddleston's glitching out, and the new guy, I can't remember his name, is like, oh, I've seen that before. Yada yada yada. I can't actually remember the trailer that well. Hold on, I'm just gonna put it in.
I'm trying to think about it as well. I think he has those time lapses or whatever, and then he basically goes on about how he's like stuck in time or whatever. I think we get a few glimpses of some characters from season 1. The lead boss woman who went off at the end of season 1, we see her, can't remember her name at all. We see Miss Minutes attacking some random people. Then we see a few random shots of Loki and Mobius in different time periods.
Yes, you do, don't you? Time slipping, that's what he's doing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one. And why do you think he's doing that?
What, time slipping?
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think what happened at the ending. Did Sylvie kill him?
No, so Sylvie killed He Who Remains, aka Kang, and then Loki goes back to the TVA, and it's a different TV, like he's in a different timeline. I think, and that's how it ends. So, yeah, because it ends, and they have the statues, and the statues are of Kang rather than whoever they were before.
Right. Okay. Oh yeah, and then towards the end they go to visit the original Kang, don't they, or something?
When he's, in season
he's
one.
At a show, yeah.
That was in that was at the end of Ant-Man.
Yeah. And it's continued in this trailer. Mm. I just watched a completely new trailer that's just come out 3 days ago. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know where they're gonna go with it really, because I think, again, Marvel have got this trend of not doing well recently, and I think they've started Kang off really badly. Because I think Ant-Man and the Wasp, that was awful. genuinely thinking back at it, I don't think the cast members did anything wrong. I just think the story itself was just terribly coordinated.
Mm.
Like, Ant-Man should not be beating Kang in any way, shape or form, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Because if he can do that now, then Kang is not the big bad we all think he is. Mm. And if Kang is trapped in the quantum realm and or trapped in the TVA or yada, 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 then he's really not a threat unless someone does something stupid. And if someone does something stupid, everyone's going to be like, why the fuck have you just done that? Excuse my language. So, for me, I think I'm intrigued by this because I feel like Loki, I like the characters that are in this series, and I think they can do, we can do well off them. And I assume he's just trying to escape the TVA essentially still.
Right.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it just purely because of Loki and Tom Hiddleston, but whether it'll be any good, I don't know, because I don't know what direction they're going in. Sorry, what about you?
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat to you. I'm looking forward to it. I do wonder, I'm more curious than anything, how much of Kang is going to be in this show. Before, obviously, he's in the middle of his whole controversy. So he was only in a little bit of the trailer, but I assume he's in a fair bit of it because they are trying to stop him. I assume he's the big bad of this show still. Or a different version of him at least. I hope he isn't. Well, obviously, you know, controversies pending, all that stuff. I like Jonathan Majors as an actor. And I like the idea of Kang. Obviously, wasn't very well executed in Ant-Man, but I like the idea of him. So I hope they can kind of like expand that a bit more in season two of Loki. I do wonder, and this is another thing that retrospectively I don't like about Loki, is that I don't think that the implications of what happened in Loki had any effect on the MCU at all, as far as I could tell, which is when you're dealing with time and timelines and multiverses, and we're in the multiversal saga, not a lot has been mentioned of all the dealings and what everything that went on in Loki, in the season one of Loki. So that kind of feeds into this kind of thing where, like, do you need to watch this show in order to understand what's going on in the MCU? I think you could have gone and watched all of Phase 4 and Phase 5 and not watch Loki, and you wouldn't miss a beat, really. So I hope that this season coming is a bit more integral to what we've got going forward, I guess, is my main point there. But I am looking forward to it, and I hope it's good. I feel like it'll be better than what we've gotten recently, but although I did hear that the woman who wrote, I think who wrote or showran most of season one, isn't doing season two, so I'm curious to know if that'll be to its detriment or to its.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Mm. Makes me more intrigued. But when's it? October the 6th. So.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, that's a Friday. So I'm assuming they're going back to Friday releases now instead of Wednesday.
Interesting. Maybe they do the first one on the Friday and then the rest go Wednesdays.
Maybe, yeah. Because me personally, I'm on record saying that I prefer Friday releases. I just think it makes it a bit more like, I look forward to it more if it releases on a Friday, because, you know, it's like, it's about to be the weekend and I'm like, oh, let me watch this kind of thing, rather than a Wednesday. When it's Wednesday, I'm like, oh, I'll get to it whenever kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a good point. Well, yeah. Not long left. We got literally
2 months.
2 months, yeah.
2 months and 2 days. And 3 days, sorry. Yeah. So, yeah, should be good. Anything else to say on Loki before I move on?
Nah, all good, all good. We can move on.
Cool. So, Loki is on Disney Plus, and another show that drops on Disney Plus is a show called The Bear.
Beautiful segue.
The Bear, I'll give a quick premise and then we can get into it. So me and Chris have both watched season 1 and season 2 of The Bear. I believe Glenn started it, but got too stressed out to continue finishing it with season 1. And I don't blame him. So The Bear is a show about a guy called Carmi, who is like a top chef, like one of the best chefs in the world. And he's from Chicago. He comes back to Chicago at his brother's restaurant, where his brother has passed away, has committed suicide. And basically he is tasked with keeping the restaurant that his brother had up and running in season 1, basically, and kind of like all like the hustle and bustle that kind of encapsulates the restaurant business and working in a restaurant and everything all around it. And then season 2 is more about them rebranding, recreating the beef, which is what the restaurant was originally called, and rebranding that as The Bear. And yeah, that's more season 2. Before we talk about season 2, Chris, what did you think about season 1, and kind of like, what was your experience with that, if you remember when you watched it?
Season 1, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was clever how they did it. So like how it was a restaurant, these people get on like family, and then obviously Carmi isn't family with cousin, but
yeah,
is family with cousin. Anyway, so like he has ties to this place, and obviously him being a top tier chef, it's weird that he's come back, but it's also like his way of trying to bring identities together. And I think it was quite nice how they like showed each individual character's personalities throughout season 1.
Mm.
Got to know who they were. And they kind of learnt to get on with each other, because obviously when he brought in, when Sydney came to join the team, it was like she was imposing herself, and what's her face? Didn't like it.
Tina.
Who? Tina. Tina didn't like it, which was an interesting dynamic, because obviously Tina wanted to keep the whole premise of Mike alive still, I feel. Like, and it was a really interesting concept that all these people love this guy Mike, and like you don't really find out anything much about Mike in season 1.
Yeah,
he's just a name.
Yeah,
and obviously we see his face and stuff, but like John Bernthal playing the character, but like he is just a name, and you wonder what's so special about this guy. And obviously Carmi always feels like he's not as good as he is yet. We get shown as character, obviously as audience, we get shown that him getting grilled by John McHale, Joel McHale, as his like head chef in a scene. You think, oh, is he as good as we think he is? And then obviously then Sydney and both Marcus are like, oh my god, dude, you're amazing. You're the best chef ever. You're the reason why I've done this. So like we get the idea that this guy is top tier in his career, in his career. And obviously it's the coming together of like all these people learning how to work with each other, learning what's where. I can't remember the tomato can scene. No, that's season 2, isn't it? But like obviously, is the end of season 1 where they have all the massive disagreement?
What Carmi and is end of season 1 is when Richie gets stabbed.
So Richie gets stabbed. Sydney leaves because she's stressed out and not getting listened to. And then Marcus gets upset because he's made this amazing donut and no one's paying attention to him.
Kami threw the photo on the floor.
I'm just going to say it. Kami's your head chef. Like, Kami shouldn't have acted like that. But Kami did ask like 10 times.
This is the thing. So
please
like,
come and do this job.
Yes.
And Marcus just ignored him.
Yes.
Over and over again. Yes. And I was like, you can't act like a child. And he acted like a child afterwards.
Yeah.
Like he stormed out and threw his cakes literally on the table and on the floor. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I do really like this series. And it is, I think it's top tier series. Mm. And I think season one and two are both great for different aspects completely. But like that last scene, like really frustrated me, like really frustrated me. Like it was a little bit funny because obviously you get stabbed in the butt. And then it's like that guy acting like a child, then Sydney kind of just like having a mental breakdown, even though she was kind of just doing her job.
Well, Sydney tries to introduce the electronic pre-order system.
Yeah.
And she fucks up and basically allows it to pre-order from whenever they started in the morning or the day before to when they opened the following day. So they had like hundreds of orders coming through all at the same time, and like they were all due in like 10 minutes. So Kami, obviously rightly but not, or maybe not rightly, has a massive go at her because it's like, you fucked up. And
she was trying to
sort it out, and she was getting all, like you said, she was having a breakdown, getting flustered, and he screams at her, get the fuck off the line.
Yeah.
And that's when she decides to leave.
Yeah. So, I think she actually acted like a child in that moment.
Yes.
But she got told off. She didn't like it. So she essentially stormed out. That's also not the last episode of the season, actually. I've just checked. That's episode 7.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So on episode 8, Kami goes to his meeting and has that deep, meaningful, like, thought-provoking moment where he speaks his actual mind about his brother and stuff. And then after that, which I thought was really powerful, and apparently he had that speech in his back pocket the whole of the season or something. I don't know. Apparently it motivated him a little bit. That was a long old speech. And then obviously you got Sydney and Marcus having a chit-chat, slag about everything that's just happened.
Mm.
You can see like Marcus kind of digging Sydney a little bit.
Mm.
And then you've got... Is it that episode as well where... No, he doesn't give Tina the knife yet, does he?
No, that's season 2.
Oh, but then they have the stag do, and it all kicks off, and then Cousin nearly gets put to jail.
Yeah.
Or he gets this sleep in the jail for that. And then... What happened?
I know at the end of season 2 is... At the very end, he finds the money in the...
He gets given the note by Cousin, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
then
in that note, it says, let it rip. And the recipe for the family meat, the family spaghetti.
Yeah.
And then by coincidence, he's making the spaghetti. And then he finds the money in the tomato cans. And then they find all the money. And that's, I think, when Sydney comes back.
I believe so, yeah.
But before Sydney comes back, Marcus just turns up, doesn't he? Halfway through the episode, he's just baking his cakes again.
I'll say yeah.
I feel like Kami does a lot of like apologizing when I don't necessarily feel like he's completely in the wrong.
I would agree. I think with Kami, it's his demeanor. So he can say something or do something, and because of the environment he's used to being in, like that hectic environment, it's just like it will be him screaming, get the fuck off the line, or him taking a donut, throwing it on the floor and stamping on it, rather than him kind of saying in more of a calm manner, more of an adult manner, like, Sydney, step back, like we messed up, let's fix it, step back, or Marcus, you know, stop this donut stuff, like let's sort it out like adults, rather than kind of like, you know, succumbing to his more like illogical side and kind of just going, having his what's it called? I'm trying to think of the word, but like not thinking through what he's doing, I guess. Because you know, like when sometimes as a person, you will try and think like, how can I say this thing to this person without like hurting their feelings or without, you know, you'll think things through and you think about the consequences of the things you're about to say before you say it. I feel like Kami a lot of the time doesn't think about what he's going to say before he says it. He just says stuff and he just fly. He tends to fly off the handle a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of times it's more of his delivery, which I feel like he needs to apologize for rather than the actual sentiment behind it. Like he's rarely ever mean-spirited. He always means well. It's just the way he goes about doing stuff.
Yeah. This is the thing. This is why I think the show is quite good, because like I feel like it's obviously it's a restaurant show, but it's like I feel like you get to know every character. The only character I feel like who I'm a bit lost on at the end of season two, this is me talking now, is Ebra.
Okay.
I don't really get what happened with him in season two.
He didn't
go to the chef course.
Yeah, so I think the idea was that he, obviously as an older gentleman, he was stuck in his ways. He couldn't do things this new way that he was learning this new school. So instead of like knuckling down and trying to learn like Tina was doing, he was like, actually like, you know what, fuck this. Like I like things my way and I'm going to keep doing them my way. And he just pisses off. But then obviously he comes back because, you know, probably had no job. I guess.
Yeah.
I was going to say, sorry, but you finished, do you want to keep talking about season one or did you want to?
No, you can crack on with season two, mate. You can crack on.
So, yeah, just before season two, I just wanted to say season one. So this is a show that I normally would probably never watch. And I don't know what inspired me to decide to watch. I think I heard quite a lot of people talking about it, actually. So I was like, oh, actually, John, let me give it a try. And I've never watched a show without violence that made me feel so tense and so stressed.
It's true though. It's so true. It is so true.
I think it might be which episode is it? I think it's the episode that we were just talking about where Sydney fucks up the pre-order thing. That whole episode, I think, is one long like 25 minute take. And it's everything I was from start to finish. I was on edge the whole time.
You kind of stress with them, innit? You stress, mate. I think it's the camera angles they get as well. And when they do close up on people's faces. And I actually think, most of the actors here have really good, intense facial expressions for when things are going wrong. And Kami kind of goes, it's more of a daydream kind of vibe, but you can see he's nervous. But I feel like the others, it's intense. But yeah, sorry, Karen, what you were saying?
No, it's fine. It's tension and it's stress, but it's like it's a good type of stress. It's a stress that I'm like, do you know what? Like, it's like you said, Chris, it's like we're in the kitchen with them. We want to get the food out as well. Like, we want to make sure the order's perfect as well.
Yeah. Kind of. Mate, that makes me think of, when you say that, it makes me think of the last episode, man. Honestly, that's so sick. Man.
Yeah. And like, I just think the show, like you say, the thing you said about Michael, like, absolutely spot on. Like, we're in season one. Like, you just hear about him and you just kind of like see. I think it's only one episode in particular where I think he's actually in it. I think. And the rest of it, like John Byrne for himself, and I think the rest of it, they just chat about him. And like the way they've kind of like they build up that character, and then you finally see him and you're like, actually, like, wow, like this is like someone who is so, John Byrne for especially, so captivating on screen. And even in the way he was just like, they were just showing him telling a story of like a crazy night out with him and Richie, and like even that, like you were like completely encapsulated what was going on.
Yeah.
And I find that so well written and so well acted. And like you've got these characters, like it's rare I think that you find a show where I want every single character in the show to succeed. Everyone's got like their own you know, strengths, their own weaknesses, their own downfall, but everybody has also got this, like, I don't know, this quality where I'm like, actually, you know, I really want you to figure out that recipe, or I really want you to become good at staging, or I really want you to kind of like, and it's just, I don't know. And there's a there's a quality about everyone in the show that I find so endearing. Even like someone like Thak, or I think his name is Neil, I think is Kami's like best mate, who like is not really like an important character, but even him, I'm just like, I just want you to be good. Like, I want you to get the electrics right. Like, I think in season one, he was saying, like, oh, do you think I can get a job here? And I was like, I want you to get a job. And then, like, introduces, like, his brother in season two, and, like, they're both idiots. And just, like, I don't know. Everything about it is just, like, it's so good. Like, and I suppose I can move on to season two now. But the thing that I kind of, like, took out of the show by the end of it is that, like, I'd probably watch, if this show was just about Kami, or if the show was just about Richie, or if it was just about Sydney, or if it was just about Marcus, I'd probably still watch it and I'd still enjoy it because I love the character so much. I just like, I don't know, I just think it's so well written. And if there was like a spin-off, even when they did, well, we can talk about it when we get to season two, but even if they did like a prequel just about Kami's family, I'd watch that as well. Like, yeah, man, I just think the show is so great. And
I forgot I was on mute. I was saying stuff and I was like, well, I was like, they could make a mad sitcom out of that, their family, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, do you want to go? Do you want to talk about season two?
Yeah, can do. And also, I was saying I totally agree about his mate as well, Thak, and yeah, the brother. It's just so funny, man. Yeah, do kind of, that makes me intrigued about their sister, what their sister could have possibly done wrong not be allowed anywhere near anyone. Like, that is so funny, man. But season two, yeah. So we start season two off, obviously, they've got the money, but they don't have enough money. And Kami straight out tells Uncle that it's his money, but they want more money to do up the restaurant and make it, like, superb, change the name from Beef to Bear. Mm. And he makes a deal, which I assume they're going to fail to meet. And then the uncle's just going to be like, I want you to carry on. Mm. But like, basically, Kami said, hey, give us 18 months. We'll get you back your money. If you don't, you can have the whole place and you can sell it. And it's like, that is the shittiest deal in the world. But okay. Like, it's so bad for the guys who are working there. But he obviously wants to succeed, and he feels like this is the only way because he needs the money, or they all need the money. It's not just him, is it? But yeah, I think again, it was a really good season. I think we got a lot more background on Kami, where he's been, what he's done. Obviously, he sent off Marcus to Copenhagen. Sydney went to all her old stomping grounds to like try out foods, and like what I really liked is you saw all their passion. Like, you saw Sydney is a real foodie. She loves her food and she was like making notes on it. And Marcus was really like, Bull Porter did really well as well.
Yeah,
he was just another Kami, which is what they, I think they wanted to achieve. That's why I was getting so confused when I saw the advert about it. I thought it was a little special that they'd done. But like, and then they're discussing the ingredients and stuff like that. And yeah, just thought it was really cool. And then I loved how Tina was so, like, when he gave her the knife, Tina was so passionate. Sorry, should I be giving a lowdown of what's happened in this season? Or should I just ramble on?
It's up to you. It's up to you, Chris, however you want to play it.
I'll just keep rambling on. Basically, like, if anyone listening, each individual character in the show went off to do their own little thing during the show while the restaurant has been destroyed and rebuilt. And during this time, a lot of issues have come about. And also during this time, we see a backstory of the family. And we also see Kami with a love interest that I don't think we heard about in season one.
No.
But she suddenly just appears in season two. And it appears that cousin and Thak and uncle and yada, 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 all these people know about this woman, and she's like this great person.
Yeah.
And she knew Mike and everyone. And yeah.
Yeah. I think they were all like, they all like grew up together, I think.
Yeah. All grew up in the same town and stuff like that. So yeah, it was cool. Basically, what was I going to say? Yeah. So And Tina goes off to culinary school and she's meant to go with, I forgot, what's his name again? Ibra?
Yeah.
Yeah. But Ibra decides, like we were talking about a minute ago, he's set in his ways and he doesn't feel like he can go to the school and do the school and all this stuff. So he kind of just, I think I just got glass in my hand. And he feels like he's going to go, and he just goes off and does his own thing, doesn't he? And then he comes back when they reopen again, which I thought was kind of mad, but that's the way they wanted to play it. So fine. Tina, Kami gives Tina his knife and she is so taken back by it. Like it's such a lovely gesture to her. And then throughout this series, another point of series, she's like, I'm sorry, I haven't given you back his knife. And he just goes, never said I wanted it back. So it's yours.
I think Kami has, just to interrupt you really quickly, I think Kami's got this really, really good ability to kind of like make people believe in themselves.
Yeah, yeah, 100%, 100%. But like, he's also got that ability where, like, for example, like risotto was season one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously when Sydney had this risotto and she thought it was amazing and Kami said, it's not right. And then Sydney just put it out to the world and it got rave reviews. And then Kami tried to hold it in. And then he just blew up and he said it wasn't ready yet. And then he gave her the advice at the end, you need more acid. Mm. And it's like, I kind of was like, why hasn't he told her already? But it's like he wants her to learn and figure it out. And I think she was getting a bit impatient, which is fair enough. Like I would get a bit frustrated if someone wasn't just telling me how to do something. But he's given them all the ability to believe, like you said, like Marcus doing the cakes, Tina doing her own bit. She's basically, in this season, she takes over as sous chef basically. And then Sydney takes over as like front of like the main chef. And then I don't really know what Carmen's role is now.
I think they're supposed to be like co-head chefs, basically.
Co-head chefs, yeah. But I actually, the story that I like the most was Cousins. I really enjoyed that story. Really enjoyed it. Because, like, I thought it was demeaning that he was cleaning the forks. And, like, it was frustration. And then, but you saw the gradual progression of him, like, with the clock. He felt a bit more alert. And then when they gave him his opportunity from cleaning forks to then actually following them around as they run the room, and he went into the meetings and he heard how insane the chef was about some smudge on the plate. And I actually thought he was going to own up and say it was him, but I'm glad he didn't. I'm glad he didn't. But like,
can I just say quickly, sorry.
Yeah.
It was really funny when the chef's going on about the smudge.
Oh, fuck you.
He goes, fuck you, Darren. He goes, yeah, fuck me.
I thought it was so unnecessary, but like, whatever, yeah.
That felt like it was like improv or something. Like.
Yeah. And then like, the way they were talking about, like, I'd love to know if these five-star restaurants do anything like this, but like, how they were talking about, like, we've researched our guests beforehand, this table aren't going to pay, this table want this. And then like, the excitement in Cousin's face when he went to go and get this Chicago Town pizza, and then they all watched as the chef destroyed the Chicago Town pizza and made some little shitty donuts, but like, it was just like his progression was just unreal, and like, I thought it was really good the way they did it. Like, I thought they really executed it very nicely. He met all these different people, really enjoyed it, and then he just didn't want to leave. But his reasoning for not wanting to leave is because he thought he was just being booted out, basically. He wasn't really being thought about. It's like punishment, and he learned it wasn't, and He I feel like he progressed the most out of everyone. I think that's really, like, really good.
Yeah.
Because it just shows that, like, I think it showed that they really relied on Mike too much at times. And they all have their individual characteristics that they weren't really applying. And then, like, the way he took control. And, like, I'm gonna jump a bit here. Because the Claire Carmen situation, it's neither here nor there for me. I think Carmi or Carmen's just being stupid anyway with the whole thing, and him not ringing the fridge man was really frustrating me as well. So I felt for Sydney in that one. But the last episode was really good, was top tier, I think, personally. I respected that they shut him in the freezer, or not that they did it, but he got shut in the freezer. I think it allowed all the other characters to flourish a little bit more.
Yeah, 100%.
Marcus having his little outburst. Oh, well, actually, we can talk about like how I feel like we knew Marcus was into Sydney, but Sydney, I feel like, is into Carmi. But I can't tell if she is or not. This is my issue. Like, sometimes I think she's getting jealous, and other times I think she's just being trying to be a good friend. And I'm like, I just don't know. Like, they've had loads of moments. Like,
I think they have purposefully written it like that so they can make a decision. Do we want these two to get together or do we not? So I think they've made it open, so it's possible.
Yeah, but I think they eventually will, the way they're going. I think, yeah, so in this as well, like, I've missed that. What would you prefer me to call him, by the way? Carmi or Carmen? I can't.
I mean, I'm going to call him Carmi. You can call him whatever you want, Chris.
Carmi. Yeah, I'll call him Carmi. Right, he basically has a love interest, Claire. They went to school together and stuff like this, or they knew each other from the neighbourhood. She takes him to a park. She bumps into him at a shop.
Chit-chat.
They swap numbers. However, he gives a fake number. Then he somehow meets up with her again. I must have missed that. How they...
She calls, she asks Fak to get through his number. And she calls.
That was it. Yeah. She calls him, they go to a party together, they have a good time. And then they eventually become boyfriend and girlfriend, although there's a bit of ambiguity on whether they are boyfriend and girlfriend. And then everyone's just like, fucking ask her out, and he does. And then the last episode ruins it for him because he overthinks, basically, and he's consistently doing the overthinking and ruining himself. But like in the last episode, they basically open, they're all ready, they're all a bit nervous, they've got the ticket machine going, and basically they've got four new people in who pretty novice in doing the job. And one of them disappears, so they're understaffed from pretty much the get-go, but they're all doing very well, they're taking the orders, and Sydney's giving out the orders. Sydney and Marcus have a little bit of a tiff, and then they get separated, and then they talk it out, and like, cool, we'll get on with the work. Carmi gets shut in the freezer or fridge, and they can't get him out because throughout the season he's meant to be getting the lock fixed, and he never does. And then Cousin comes in, and they set a 5-minute timer, and they have to do rush orders where they're so far behind they need to get all the food out, basically. That's how I see it. And they do it, and they come together as a team really well, and it's really nice to see them like really harmonizing. And obviously Cousin learning what he's learned from his trade, Tina's managed to excel in her bit, Sydney's actually doing some food bits that she should be doing, Marcus is doing his desserts, and he's got like five different ones that he's so proud of. And I think like it's such a good like ep and scene for me. The mum bit, I was a bit like, felt a bit, because I kind of feel sorry for Thingy's husband.
I really, really enjoyed that scene from both the mum's perspective and both his name Pete. I can't remember what his name is.
That's what I'm just trying to look up now.
Is it Pete?
I don't know what I've done with my list. I was typing in Red Panda, sorry. Pete.
From both,
he's married to Sugar, isn't he?
Married to Sugar, yeah. From his perspective as well, because, like, this is what I mean about, like, this show kind of, like, I'm rooting for everyone, even Pete, who's, like, he's actually really, really nice. In, the three episodes he's in, he's really nice.
Yeah.
Means really well, but he's a bit of a knob. And, like, not in, like, a malicious way. He's just, you know, a bit too like over eager sometimes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like you get this scene with him and the mum, and played by Jamie Lee Curtis, where she, from her perspective, she's like, she says like she loves her kids. She just doesn't know how to show that she loves them. And she didn't want to go in that restaurant because she knew somehow, some way, she would fuck it up or make them feel bad about what's going on in the situation.
Yeah.
So in her mind, she's like, I'm not going to go in there for their good so they can have their moment and so I won't ruin it.
Yeah.
But obviously from Sugar's mind, she's like, more than anything, she just wants her mum to turn up and say, you know, I'm proud of you or something like that.
Yeah.
But the mum can't do that because it's not in her nature. She doesn't know how to show love or gratitude. Yeah, and then Pete in that situation where he's just like begging her, like, just come inside, like it's not, like, it's not a big deal, like, she's waiting for you, she loves you, we love you, we want you to come inside. And like the emotion on his face where he's just like all he wants is for his wife to be happy, like, and then this woman is kind of like, Jamie Lee Curtis says, is like opposing him, and he's just like, he doesn't, and she says like, you can't tell her that I was even here, and he just doesn't know what to do. And I'm just like, fuck, man, that must be such a, like, such a heartbreaking situation.
Yeah, because you know it's going to come around and fuck him up as well. Yeah. Later on, because obviously he's told the mum about the pregnancy as well, which he didn't, he wasn't meant to do.
Yeah.
Although he could have probably been given a bit more clue on whether he should have been told. And like, yeah, I feel sorry for him because he's only meant well in the last, in the, yeah, like, three episodes he's been in. He's what, he's offered out the freezer.
Yeah.
He's just trying to chat to him. He bought the fish, and now he's been in this situation.
Yeah.
But he acted so well in it as well, though.
That's great. He's
like,
great.
He, when she came back to the table, and he was just like, I'm just so proud of you. And it was just like, oh, man, this guy is an emotional wreck.
Mm.
And he's, there's like nothing he can really like do about it. And I was like, oh, man.
Because it's that thing of like, what would, yeah, yeah, he has to think like, he could keep it a secret from her, which, fair enough, she would be disappointed, like, in thinking that her mum didn't come. But what would be more disappointing, knowing that your mum didn't come, or knowing that she came but she couldn't come in, she didn't want to come inside, like, and it's like that kind of like weighing up that thing of like, actually, what's going to hurt my wife more, kind of like, and like him having to kind of deal with that. I think, like you say, he showed it all in his face, and it was just really, really great acting.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I'm just trying to, because I purposely not spoke about the family episode yet, because I feel like it's, I just thought we'd get everything else out of the way before we do. I'll be honest, I thought Marcus was going to die.
What?
I thought that the crackhead was going to kill him.
What?
Genuinely thought the crackhead was going to kill him.
Why did you think that?
Like, I thought, like, so obviously when he first saw him, and he was like, oh yeah, I think you're gonna be fired. And he's like, but I'll talk to the boss. And he went in, and then he went outside on his own and didn't come back. And when Sydney went outside to throw up, I thought she's just gonna see a dead body that from the so Kraken funny. Like killing him. I don't know what came over me. I just thought it was gonna,
I think that.
Did you not? Oh shit,
not
man,
at all, just, not even the slightest.
I don't know why I thought it. I just. Oh,
it
yeah.
Like, it looks like Marcus's mum has passed away.
Cause he's
getting the text and calls from his mum's nurse. Yeah. Which is another thing where I was like, this show just has a way of, like, fucking pulling at your heartstrings. Because I was like, I think at that moment they had just gotten through the rush. So I was like, fuck yeah, they did it. Like,
yeah.
So happy for all of them. But also, at the same time, I was like, oh, but Kami's inside going mental. I feel really bad for Kami. But then you get this other bit with Marcus's mum, and it's like, she's probably going to die. And I'm like, oh, fucking hell. Like, this show's got to... It brings you up just to cut you down, mate. Fucking hell.
Yeah, generally does as well. That's the thing. But I've got to say, this season has brought in some big old characters, you know?
Mate, the guest cast is crazy.
Unreal, especially the family. So perspective for the audience listening, there was an episode where I think it was episode
6, I think.
6. I'll look it up now, so we just fishes, yeah, 6, you're right. So episode 6, where I don't know if they mentioned 7 fishes before. I feel like they have.
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest.
But we go back to a time, I don't know what year, but
five years.
Kami and the family, all the family, even members that we haven't seen yet or even heard of, come together for a family meal. And you just see the absolute chaos in this household. I mean, I'm sure Christmas Day is chaos for a lot of people, but like, Kami's just come back. There's like, I feel like a bit of resentment towards Kami because he hasn't really kept in contact with his family.
Mm.
And you kind of wonder why. And then you see this chaos and you're like, right, makes sense. Kami, you find out that their dad has died previously to this, and the mum's remarried or repartnered to a guy called
Uncle Lee.
Who?
Uncle Lee. Who's that?
What, the Bob, what's his face? He's called Uncle Lee.
Yeah, Uncle Lee, L-E-E.
Oh, so she hasn't remarried.
Well, no, she's like his boyfriend, I think.
Oh, okay. Right.
I think they are together.
Yeah, so he's in it. Then we got, who was it you said played the mum? Sorry?
Jamie Lee Curtis
playing the mum. We've got Sarah Paulson playing another cousin.
Yeah, cousin Michelle.
Cousin Michelle. Then you've got, I think this guy's quite famous as well, John Mulaney, who's playing Stevie.
Yeah.
Loved
his character, by the way.
Yeah, I thought his character was great. He was actually great. What's her face from... is it
something Jacobs? Gillian Jacobs, I think.
Gillian Jacobs, yeah, playing Tiffany, who's a cousin that we know and love. He's his girlfriend of the time or wife at the time.
Mm.
And that she's pregnant with their child, who he talks about in the series quite a bit. And basically we just see the dynamic of a lot of different elements going on. So like Mike's got a bit of resentment towards Carmi. Carmi's got a bit of resentment towards Mike. You got what's her name again? Sorry, I've forgotten her name. The sister. Sugar. Yeah, sorry. Sugar worrying about her mum, always asking her mum if she's all right, and they're telling her to chill out. Cousins there. Cousins trying to talk to his girlfriend about what he's going to do next, because obviously he needs to get a bit more money, and she's like not pressuring him, but she's saying he needs to get this house, and she really wants this house from him, and she's got morning sickness, so she's not really too much in the episode. Then you've got Uncle, who's there, who's just chilling. You got the whole family, the whole shebang. You got what's his name, Fax's brother's there. They discuss about their sister, who's not allowed to be there.
They're dressed exactly the same, which I think is absolutely adorable.
Hilarious. Love that. And I love the fact that Stevie comes in and he's like, I love being here because I just don't know what you two are going to do like every year. And I love it. And you got cousin recording them dancing. Oh, no, he wasn't recording. He was just playing music for him in it while they were dancing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But the mum, you can tell they're signing up with the mum because she's just in the kitchen. And she's making all this food by hand. Like, she's going a bit crazy. She's like, no one really loves me. I'm doing all this work. No one really gives me appreciation. Carmi comes in to try and help. But Carmi's not really focused too much on what she's saying. And, like, she's getting a bit erratic. And then, like, yeah, that's a good chunk of it. And then, obviously, Lee comes in with, like, this idea. And then Mike's like, oh, that's not a good idea, that's a shit idea. And Lee's like, why would you say that? So you can see there's animosity between Mike and Lee. Then Carmi like draws something for Mike, gives it to him, and Mike's like really like touched by it, and like tells him he loves him, and I think it's a design of a restaurant.
Yeah,
I think. And then like, yeah, and then you think like everything's calmed down, like it was all very everywhere, everything everywhere all at once kind of vibe. It's going a bit crazy. And then they sit down for dinner, and Uncle Lee and Mike, well, Mike's just taking drugs, we assume.
Yeah.
But they're butting heads, and they're at the opposite end. Well, they're diagonal from each other at the table.
Yeah.
And everyone's chilling, chatting, and then they have an argument, and then Mike throws a fork at him, and he's like, do it again, watch. And he throws another fork at him, and then he's like, you do that again, I will deck you. And then they like beg Mike not to do it, and Mike's kind of holding back not from doing it. And then the mum comes in, and then the mum's like, what's happened? And everyone's like, no, nothing. And then she's kind of like taking the personal attack that no one's telling her anything, I feel, is what she's going with. And then like the boy said to Sugar, don't say to your mum, are you okay? And she says it, and the mum just loses her shit at the dining table. Then she leaves after losing her shit. Mike throws a fork at Lee. Lee goes to batter Mike, and Mike goes to batter Lee. Everyone stops him, and then the mum just fucking smashes her car through the side of the fucking house.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell? I was like, no wonder Carmi don't want to come back to this mess.
What is the thing? Like, in the middle of all that, Sarah Paulson's character who presumably grew up, I think, in Chicago as well.
Yeah.
She moved to New York, and she says to Carmi, like, I want you to come and stay with me in New York, because basically saying, if you stay here, you will not make anything of yourself. You will descend into all this chaos that you're surrounded, that you are surrounded by. You will descend into it. Like, you won't be the person who you meant to be. And Carmi's kind of like reluctant, like, oh, yeah, sure, maybe I'll let you know. And I think then when the mum finally crashes the car through the house, he's like, actually, do you know what? I have to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I've got to go, because this is crazy. Yeah. And I think it's really nice that they added her character into, like, she shows a perspective. Like, she's the audience, like, shouting at him to be like, get out of here. Get the hell out of here. Mm. And I think Stevie's little speech, because he was obviously saying Grace. And he didn't know what to say, and then he actually said, like, a really, like, beautiful speech.
Yeah.
And then it was all just ruined by that are you okay moment. But yeah, no, honestly, like, I think it's been top tier acting throughout, top tier. But yeah, I don't want to give it all praise, but I do struggle a little bit to find a fault in this, because it's not really my area of expertise, a cooking related series.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I'm kind of a bit like it's like I was trying to think of, like, what, whilst we were talking just now, I think, okay, actually, like, what criticisms would I kind of come up with? And there wasn't a criticism that I could think of that wasn't, I think, done deliberately for the purpose of the show, because like, my criticism would have been like, oh, I wish Carmi wasn't stuck in the freezer for that episode, but that's part of, like, the drama of it, and the reason why he was in there, so, like, we could kind of get the explosion at the end. And I generally, this is probably the favorite, it's probably the best show I have watched this year. As there's no problem about it, it is my favorite show this year by far.
Yeah.
And I feel like it reminds me of, like, when we get to, like, when we watch shows, and I guess it's kind of comparing apples and oranges, but when we get shows like, you know, Boba Fett, for example, you know, the Star Wars shows, the Disney shows, and you get these 6, 7, 8 episode seasons, and you've got, like, 2 episodes that are filler.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how the fuck can you have a filler episode in, like, a 6 or 8 episode series? And then you get to a show like The Bear, where I feel like no episode is wasted. Every episode is integral to either the moving forward the storyline, or moving forward what we know about the characters who are in the show.
Like,
when you get to season 2, and this, it's definitely more of an exploration of certain characters and kind of getting into their psyche, where they are, where they were in terms of their mindset, where they are in the present. I think that the show's done such a good job of kind of, like, saying, okay, cool, season 1, this is the world that we've built out, like, this is, you know, this is how this works, this is how stressful this job is, this is how, you know, all the business side of it works, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now season 2, we're going to make you basically, like, fall in love with this whole character, so you feel like you are part of this family, this Beef Bear family. And I just wanted to kind of go over a few things from a couple of the episodes that I just think were really well done. So I was thinking of, and also just quickly, because I remember you saying, talking about Claire, I actually really like Claire. And I like Claire for Carmi, because I feel like Carmi is a guy who's just, like, really awkward, really shy. And I think he thinks of himself as someone who's, like, not really deserving of having someone to be in love with, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, Claire then comes along, they chat, they flirt. He even gives her the wrong number, either for the reason that he thinks, either one, this is going to distract me from my job, or two, like, I don't deserve this, so I don't deserve her. She doesn't, like, I don't want to bring her life down, so I'm going to give her a wrong number so she doesn't have to deal with me. And then she even just actually, she's actually, no, I fancied you since we were, I don't know, 14, 15. I really like you. And then she forces her way into his life for his betterment, because he doesn't want to, well, I don't want him to end up like his brother. Like, someone who, you know, is so hyper-focused on, like, one particular thing, or kind of, like, making something work, that you kind of, like, shut out all other aspects of your life. and then you end up going fucking crazy and, you know, blowing your brains out. But yeah, sorry, that was just, yeah, talking about Claire.
Be fair though, it's a good point. Like, I'm not in disagreement. I for the show of what it is, that element of it wasn't the front focus of my liking for the show. But I totally 100% agree with you. I think she's a new element to Carmi, and the way he thinks and the way he acts, and because we kind of slightly deviated from season one, where it's mostly about Mike and how he's influenced him, to like this season where it's all of them being individual,
yeah,
and coming together kind of vibe. Yeah. And like obviously that speech that Carmi did, and it's just unfortunate timing,
yeah,
of her hearing.
I was like, in that speech, he's like, I just wanted like even to talk about the speech a little bit, because
yeah,
he's like saying that like, this is basically like, this is fake. Like, I ended up in this fridge because I took my eye off the ball. He has the conversation with Uncle Jimmy, or whatever his name is, Uncle Jimmy, before, where Jimmy's talking, he gives him like the baseball analogy, where he's like, basically like, these small little fuck ups lead to big fuck ups. Don't fuck up.
Yeah. And
I think Carmi doesn't quite get it at that point in time in the conversation, but then when he's in the fridge, he's like, this has been building up. Like, I've been forgetful. I've been, you know, the fridge is fucked. The pots and pans are on the wrong side. Like, all this stuff that I should have been taken care of, I've not been, because I've been distracted. And I guess it's up to him, and it up to, he even says, like, I don't, he's like, I don't need to receive love and I don't need to give love. All I need is this. I'm the best at this because I'm focused on this and none of the bullshit outside of this. And obviously she hears all of this kind of like after she left her a voicemail talking about how much she loves him.
Yeah. And that was kind of deep. The end.
It was deep, man. I was like, because obviously we see her go back to the kitchen before he starts his speech. And I'm just like, fuck, she's listening to all of this. And I'm just like, yeah. Oh, it's so fucking heartbreaking. And then she says, like, I think she's like, I'm sorry you feel that way. And then she walks off. And then he listens to the voicemail. And then when she tells, at the end of it, when she says, oh, she loves him, he just, like, drops the phone because he's like, I fucked up.
Yeah, like, he's fucked up. Messed it up massively, yeah. And then I felt like, because I really like Carlton's character. I think this season's really like made him flourish. That argument they had at the end.
Oh.
And like, I feel like, again, Carmi wasn't listening.
No.
Because they were arguing and then Cousin just went, I love you though.
Yeah.
I love you, man.
Yeah.
And I think he said it two or three times.
Yeah.
And then Carmi didn't say it back. And I was like, Carmi does love you. He's just not thinking right now.
Yeah.
Because he's like, had heartbreak and now you're just beating down on him.
Yeah.
He's stuck in a fridge. Like, his life is, and you guys just finished service without him. He is feeling probably like the tiniest speck in their life right now. So he's kind of feeling like how Cousin was feeling at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Like, feeling like he's not worth anything. But yeah, I just thought it was really impactful, that last scene.
Definitely.
And obviously, go on, sorry.
No, go for it.
No, I was going to go on saying else. You say you go.
Okay, cool. So yeah, like I was gonna say, like you say at the beginning of the season, Richie, Cousin, he says like in episode one, like, I don't have purpose, like I don't know why I'm here, what I'm meant for, and he finds that purpose in episode seven. Forks, and like he finds his purpose in that, and his purpose is taking care of people and kind of like being in charge, being in that kind of that role, to kind of like be a like in hospitality, making people feel good about themselves when they come to his restaurant, and him doing that makes him feel good about himself. He says he starts wearing suits because he says, when I wear a suit, I feel good about myself. And I genuinely got so emotional when he said that, and I have no idea why.
I agree, like there was a real emotional things to what he was saying. And, like, you don't ever expect to feel that way, especially about a character who's not really, like, your character you're not really necessarily rooting for at the beginning of this whole thing.
Yeah.
To now you actually are rooting for him, like, all the way kind of vibe.
And I love how everyone says to him, like, when he puts on the suit, everyone says, oh, you're in a suit. And he's like, yeah, I wear suits now. And everyone's like, fuck, yeah, go on, Richie. Like, yeah, take pride in yourself. Like, where, like, no one takes the piss out of him for it. Everyone says, like, yeah, you look sick. Like,
yeah. And I love that. Like, that's so good.
And then, and yeah, yeah, like you say, like, he started off the season, like, at his lowest. And then you get to episode 10, where he's just smashed the that rush bit. And now he's like, he is... I don't want to say the moral high ground over Carmi, but he's kind of like in the better place in his life than Carmi is at that moment in time. And it's just showing that, like, how the dynamics have changed over the course of the season. And yeah, even the fact that, like, he does, they, like, they do, this is a whole family, they do love each other. Everybody messes up, but he's literally, Richie, I think, from season one would argue and argue and argue and not, and then just piss off. But this one, he's literally trying to get through to Carmi saying, actually, no, I love you. Like, I actually love you. Like, I'm trying to do what is best for you. Like, I'm trying to help you so that you don't end up dead. Like, so I don't have to bury you like I buried your brother.
Yeah, that's deep. That's so deep, man.
Yeah, man. And also one thing, I think that last episode as well was so well shot and well edited. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but, like, they did this thing where when somebody would come into the kitchen, like, they obviously show their face, show the scene, show whatever's going on, and the music is, like, very, like, tense, like, like, as in, like, we're, like, as in, like, there's a time limit. It was, like, that sort of music. And then as soon as the camera, when they go back out to the front with the seats and everything, the camera would follow them out, and then that music would go away, and it just goes straight back into just background music, people chatting, mute, and stuff like that. I thought it was really well done to kind of, like, capture, like, that, how it transitions, I assume, when you work in a restaurant from everyone shouting, screaming, we need this, we need 10 this, behind, corner, and then you have to go back through to the actual seating, and everything's just like, everyone's acting like it's normal, like you wouldn't even know about all the chaos that's going on behind the scenes.
Going on behind, good point, yeah. It's like when he was shouting, he was like, oh, he was like, fuck yeah, and he looked round, he was like, oh, shouldn't probably say that out loud, so, also loud. It's good, man, it's a good season, and I think for people who don't really think this is their cup of tea, they should maybe give it an episode or two, because season two, I think, is better than season one, by the way, I've just spoke about it, and you've spoken about it.
I think I wonder if you watch season one, actually, just to...
Well, the benefit of this is, when you said we're going to talk about it, I basically watched half of season one as well as season two.
Oh, nice.
Not sure how I've actually managed that in the time, but
it helps that the episodes aren't that long. I think season one, two is definitely shorter than season one. I mean, sorry, longer than season one, but yeah, it helps that they're not like hour long, or they're not all hour long episodes, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I feel like they don't feel that long either, kudos to the writers, because you're obviously not making me feel like I need to, that it's long, basically. You're not making it feel like it's long to me, but
they fit a lot into the time that they give us as well.
Yeah,
you don't ever feel shortchanged.
Yeah, I agree, but I do think it's a massive shame that we're probably not going to see a season three of this for another 2 years now.
Yeah, it's still gonna be that's so disappointing. Oh, mate.
Just, like, there's nothing you can do about it either.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a shame, but man.
We move, and hopefully hopefully we'll get it sooner than we hope.
Hopefully, yeah. But yeah, this is my favourite show at the minute, I would say. And I don't know if it's because I've just been starved of quality TV recently, but something about the show, I really, really resonate with it. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. And if I was a crazy man, I would say, do you know what, it made me want to work in a kitchen, but I could never, ever work in that environment. It's way too stressful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. If it is genuinely anything like that, that is crazy. Nah. I couldn't do it personally.
I've heard people who have, I've listened to a few people who have worked in restaurants before talking about the show, and they're like, yeah, this is like pretty spot on. Like, it is this hectic.
Well, yeah, I heard the most of the actors went and did like culinary bits to like make sure they'd done it all right, and they had the right intensity and stuff. So, yeah, man, it's mad.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, is there anything that we've left out that we should be speaking about? I feel like we've covered it pretty much.
Yeah, I'm trying to look through it now. Like, obviously, Sugar's pregnant. We said that.
Yeah.
and she's become like their project manager, and they had a bit of a tiff beforehand because Kami didn't really speak to her after her brother died.
Yeah.
And now they're like besties.
I like that Sugar's like more of like a main character now as well, because before she was kind of just like a bit of the annoying sister, but now she's actually like a proper
character involved in it all.
Fleshed out character, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we haven't talked a lot about Sydney.
True, she's had a bit of ups and downs. I feel like she's just not. She's sometimes not sure with the direction she's going in. She gets thrown quite a lot of curveballs, especially from her dad. It's not like her dad doesn't believe in her, but her dad wants to give her options should this fail. Obviously, she has the scenario where I feel like Marcus likes her, and I didn't get the feeling she felt the same way back. But she might do. I just didn't necessarily get that in that moment. You see how like passionate she is for food as well, especially was it episode omelette? Like I don't know what shit she put on top of that, but she was crisps and stuff, wasn't it? Sour cream and chive crisps. Which I've never heard of anyone doing, but I'm sure it's something. But it's like stuff like that, like you can just throughout it, you see her passion, and you've seen the places she worked, and obviously you see her self-realization when she goes to that one restaurant and the lady's like, oh, so you own the restaurant? She's like, no. And they're like, oh, you're head chef? And she's like, no. And they're like, you get a percentage? Don't know. And it's like, she's obviously going from season one to now, she's just gone in head first. She knows that Kami works in, she's just gone for it. But she's totally transitioned into wanting more. And then she's trying to get more from it, not in a nasty way, but she just, I think she knows her worth and she's trying to get as much of that back as possible.
I think with Sydney as well, just to piggyback off what you just said, like she's very, I think similar to Kami, I think she's actually, no, I think she's quite opposite to Kami. I think she's quite passive aggressive, so she'll like say like a passing comment, or like for example when I think they knocked down the wall and they didn't tell her that they were going to knock down the wall, and she made like a snarky comment or something like that, and then that kind of like that she just has overall this nagging feeling that she's eventually going to get cut out of this, especially when you like Claire gets introduced to it, and like it's like shown that Carmi's like talking to Claire about the restaurant and stuff like that rather than talking to her. So I think, yeah, she's definitely got this paranoia, this looming paranoia that, like, fuck, I'm going to get fucked again. Like, I'm going to fail again but this time it's going to be because, like, me, her and Kami aren't communicating properly. They're not talking to each other.
Yeah.
But I would say that I really do, I enjoy their relationship a lot. I think I like, quite like that they've introduced this rubbing your hand on your heart kind of thing to say you're sorry. I quite like that, and even like the scene that they had, I want to say it's episode 9 but it might be episode 10, where Kami's fixing the table and he asks her to help him, and they basically say like, they both say to each other like, I need you to do this, like I can't do this without you and I wouldn't want to do this without you, like, and I think if it is a friendship, it's like it's that they're writing for, it's genuinely like a really really beautiful like platonic friendship that they've written here. And I really do like that the only thing I wish they would talk a little bit more, but I really do like that they support each other, and they, especially Kami, I feel like really 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 loves to like encourage Sydney to kind of like be better. Like, I think it's like a steel sharpened steel sort of situation. Like, I think Kami wants to have Sydney around so that he can make her better and also make himself better as well, like as a cook. And yeah, I think their relationship is really, really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, mate, 100% agree. 100% agree. I think it's an interesting dynamic as well. And I think I think it'd be really nice if it was a platonic relationship. Sorry, didn't mean to elongate my word there. all round, I think it's a great series. I'd rate it probably... I feel like I'm going to overdo this. I want to give it an 8.5 or a 9.
Yeah, Well, we spoke about this. We spoke about this literally yesterday about giving things 10 out of 10s.
Yeah, I know. I feel like episode-wise, Forks and the family ep would probably get a 10 out of 10.
That's fair.
I wouldn't... Yeah, I think... Because, like... I'm trying to think, like, what episodes there were. Yeah, season one was decent. Nothing crazy about it. Pasta was interesting episode. So I think they don't necessarily bring it down, but they deviate it from being a 10 out of 10 overall. But it's probably a 9.5 personally. I really enjoyed it, and I could easily watch it again.
Easily, yeah.
And I like all the characters. And it's hard to do that.
It's like rare. EMP, it's so
yeah.
Rare.
Well, I say like all the characters. I don't like Bob's character.
Oh, he's a dick. Yeah.
Lee, but that's the whole point. No one's meant to like him, so yeah.
But yeah, no, everyone, even the uncle, who I think can be a bit of a, like Uncle Jimmy, can be a bit of a knob. Like, but actually, I like him as well because, like, do you know what? He's just being realistic, and he's like, and it is his money that they're playing with, so he's like, you know, giving them the actual like realistic point of view of stuff. So yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I actually want to give the show a 10. Do you know what? I'm going to give it a 10.
Yeah?
10 out of 10, yeah.
Love all it. Right, cool, sweet. All right. I'll go with you, mate. I'll go, fuck it. All right, let's do 10 out of 10s, mate. 20 out of 20. But...
20 out of 20.
Nah, it's really good, though. It is really good.
Yeah, it's a great show. And yeah, it pains me that the realisation that you've given me that season 3 is probably going to be years away.
Yeah, sorry, mate. Unless they're not on writer's strike, they probably haven't even started filming it.
I want to start season cousin.
Oh, to be fair, they haven't even announced they're going to do a season 3.
Oh, they surely have to.
Yeah, they will. Of course they will. Yeah.
But yeah, unless you have you got anything else you want to?
Nah, I'm all good, mate. Yeah.
I think we'll leave it there because we've literally talking about the bear for, I think, over an hour.
To be fair, we spoke about a Secret Invasion for quite a bit as well. Cool. Sounds good.
Cool. We'll leave it there for now. So if you're still listening, thank you for listening. Watch The Bear on Disney Plus.
Next week we'll talk about Barbie and Mission Impossible.
Yes, Barbie, Mission Impossible, and probably Oppenheimer. I don't know if you plan to see that, Chris, in the next week or so.
No, probably not. We'll see.
Okay. But yeah, those will be the next ones that we talk about. We'll be a bit late to the game, but it doesn't matter as long as we still chat about it.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at YICPodcast17.
Obi?
Yes?
Not called Twitter anymore, mate.
Oh, sorry, yeah. You can follow us on... Oh, God. You can follow us on X. Horrible. Horrible name. You follow us on X at YICPodcast17 and also on Instagram and TikTok at Your Average Critics. And you can listen to us on all your podcast apps, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, etc. And yeah, thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Keep it sexy.